And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys to the tail end of the second bye week. We said we would be here, and we are here to kill some time for you heading into what is the coldest weekend of the year here in the Twin Cities. High temps in the 30s. I know Luke is trying to find his blaze orange everywhere for deer opener. Luke, how excited are you to go sit in a hedgerow? Where are you going to be on Saturday morning?
I don't think I've deer hunted since I was 14, and I don't really plan to ever again.
What was the traumatic experience that scarred you from my only, well, I have more than one hobby. I promise I do. What scarred you?
I don't think it scarred me. I just think it wasn't for me. Like, I'm not a sit still kind of person. And I know sure. that you can, I know you can walk and stuff, but I fell asleep in that deer stand so many times. I just was like, I don't think this is for me. And I've since moved on. I didn't try again. So maybe it's, I need to try like the whole deer hunt camp experience, but nah, it's just not for me.
I'm sure many people will actually be listening to this on their drive to wherever deer camp is on Friday night. And, I'm sure there'll be a couple two, three, six, seven rum runners that'll be spilt along the way, but it's about the journey, not the destination.
You the journey's the juice, right? So, okay. This is a bi-week podcast. I want to revisit a comment we got recently, Ryan, and that was a suggestion that we should have a girlfriend slash wives bi-week podcast.
Well, your side piece couldn't make it. Well, and I'm married, so.
Well, so my wife skipped town and isn't showing up for the episode. So
she went to go get milk and cigarettes, and Luke is still waiting for her to come home with a couple of children. So we'll see.
So yeah, it's me and the two amigos upstairs sleeping. And yeah, she's not joining the episode. It sounded like your wife wasn't going to join us solo.
There's no shot she would, if she would have known, well, she does know that it was just going to be her, no shot she would want to come on the podcast by herself.
Yeah. So, boy, we'll have to hit another bye week or off season episode. I was going to ask my wife some really deep questions about Gopher football and see what she could really come up with. My guess is she wouldn't have answered very many of them correctly. I'm not even sure what I would have asked her, to be honest. But oh, here we go. I got a couple ideas. Have the Gophers won or lost more games this year? I don't think she'd know.
I don't think my wife would know either.
Do you think your wife could name a single player on the Gophers?
I don't know. I think the last one she could for sure name is Tanner Morgan.
Okay.
Because little peek behind the curtain. I used to talk to Tanner's father quite a bit, Ted Morgan, back in the day.
So, yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, may he rest in peace.
Yeah.
Great dude. But, she used to see the name come up on the phone. So I think that's the last one she could probably name was probably Tanner.
Okay. I'd ask my wife how many games are left. She would know exactly how many games are left.
Oh, mine wouldn't have a shot. She would know that the only game that she knows is the Wisconsin game. Why does she know that?
Because it's around Thanksgiving.
Correct. And considering her family is in Madison, my mm-hmm. family is here in the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. That's how we determine who gets Thanksgiving and who gets Christmas is Ooh. If the Axe game is in Madison, she comes down. She usually goes to the game with a family member or two. Or if it's up here, she'll get to stay up here. That's essentially the only game she knows outside of the bowl game. And even then, if it's a warm destination, she'll come. But here's the thing I have to start to pose to her mm-hmm. is, did you read Dan Owen's bowl projection article on GopherIllustrated.com?
I haven't yet. It's open in a tab, though.
So I will give a shameless plug to Dan. He is a dear friend of mine. And I'm sure if he ever listens to this, he's going to be mortified that I said something nice about him. I tweet it out all the time, folks, and I don't know that people actually listen to it. when I say no one, and I promise you, no one on this giant circular rock in the sky thinks about Gopher football bowl game projections and what should be happening compared to what, let's say, ESPN, On3, whatever your favorite bowl projection thing, actually put the minimal effort into. Dan goes above and beyond and writes thousands of words each week. So now that the Gophers are A, bowl eligible, and B, it's November, I think you should start reading those free articles that Dan put so much time and thought into. But would we qualify Nash Vegas as a warm weather destination, aka do I think I can convince my wife to come to Nashville?
Well, Nashville is just a solid town in general, so I think yes. Like, I don't think it has to even be that warm. Nashville's just it's a good hang, as they say.
She's not huge into the country music, I will say that. So her again, if you want to go Luke Combs, if you want to go Morgan Wallen, if you want to go a little older than that, that's not really her vibe. But
you're speaking a lot of Greek to me, so, but yeah, whatever. It's fun. But if you end up there, I got some restaurant tips for you.
I've been there once before, and I had you'd be shocked to know, if you've ever run into me at a Soda Social before, Luke, you'd be I don't know if you would be surprised or unsurprised to find out that I'll have a couple 6, 7, 8 on one of those. I mean, why not? We're with the people. We gotta break bread with the people. So, especially for the bowl games, it's been a long year, and as many of you listen to. And I'm going to assume, because Luke let me know before this podcast hit record, that we had a record number of Spotify comments on this one.
We did.
And I'm going to assume some of it's at least related to my Sunday sermon about finding joy in your life. Mm-hmm. So after a season in which it seems like this fan base, even with a 6-3 record, and I understand the consternation to an extent, I understand it hasn't been pretty. Everything about it has been painful at times, and it's like putting lipstick on your favorite pig. But 6-3, 4-2 hits a lot different compared to, say, 3-6, 1-5. That's all I'm going to continue to say is there's a lot of teams in this Big Ten that would kill for the record that Minnesota has right now, including one in the University of Wisconsin that announced today that Luke Fickell is going to return for the 2026 season. Luke, do you have any thoughts, feelings, and suggestions for Chris McIntosh?
I actually don't think it's fiscally that crazy of a strategy. I get that he hasn't had success there, but generally speaking, this probably isn't the year to try and turn over a coach.
Especially if you're the University of Wisconsin and you look at what the job market is, and yeah, you see that you would not be a top 10 job in this job market. Yeah, I'm all with you.
So, especially
for what's still potentially to come.
But like, he has proven previously to be a good coach.
You were the one that when he got hired came on this very podcast, and there's receipts saying you didn't think Luke Fickell was a good hire.
Well, I didn't think it was a good hire because of what he said after the fact. There was the whole dairy raid thing. And Bill Connolly wrote a great article at one point saying how stupid the Brewster hire was because they're just drastically changing the identity of Minnesota and what the program had been and how hard it was to get Minnesota back to the level that it was under Glenn Mason. Mm-hmm. And that really proved to be true, and the data proved that. And that's effectively what Luke Fickell was basically arguing for. And so to me, that just didn't make sense. And I had kind of lived through that. And I'm like, this sort of feels like we're repeating history again, something we do a lot as a species. And ultimately, I think I've been proven somewhat correct in that.
Mm. Yeah. So it's going to be very interesting because they come out and said, we're going to put more money into the football program. I would assume that would mean they found some boosters to give some additional million to hopefully give them a quarterback. Now, I know that your guy, Billy Edwards, has not been healthy all year. I can't wait for him to be healthy for one and one game only, and that is the Gopher game at the end of the season. But it is very interesting to see Wisconsin. I don't know that. Would you say double down is the right word for this?
I don't. They didn't extend him, did they?
No.
Yeah, I don't think you're doubling down. You're just not reneging on your contract.
Yeah. Again, that's a lot of money. What was the buyout? 25. It's similar to Flex, where I believe it's 25-ish million, isn't it?
I don't know.
I think it's somewhere around there. So if you were going to have to spend the money to then spend the money to buy somebody else out to then give them a raise, everybody continues to try and tell me that Wisconsin doesn't have a lot of money. I mean, okay, in comparison to what? They have more money than the University of Minnesota Athletic Department, but you often say this as well, comparisons do steal your joy. So we had a record number of Spotify comments from the Michigan State breakdown. I'm sure many of them were praising Derek for the way he's able to explain football to even me, the common folk. But what do we have on there?
I apparently had a word flub again, this time something about quarterback. But I said,
yeah, I made that comment when you said it.
I know. But someone called it out in an LOL. It was a mistake. Mistakes happen. Mm. Somebody commented on the last volcano that erupted in the continental U.S.
Okay. When is that?
It's the Great Sitkin in Alaska, and it's currently erupting. I don't know.
You know, as someone who just visited that great state about 6 months ago, which for folks who have never been to Alaska.
My folks were just there too.
For folks who have never been to Alaska and you enjoy the outdoors or just enjoy being among nature,
mm-hmm.
I wish I could go back tomorrow. It's so beautiful, so serene. It's perfect up there. So now, see, the more I learn, and this is what the Spotify commenters are here for. This is what we love to see. What else we got?
Someone's not pleased with the new ads that we added that precede the bumper music. And I guess, I think we announced at one point that we were going to be adding those ads, and we would kind of take it on a case-by-case basis. I understand the frustration that the individual has, and that's fair. The bumper music is great. And the ads, you know, maybe if you skip them, that can be frustrating. But in the same respect, sir, I think they're going to stay because it generates a little revenue for the pod, and the wives like that. Just to go close circle a little bit. When I disappear for an hour plus at a time to talk to Ryan Burns, I'm not saying that she's assuming that I'm having an emotional affair with Ryan, but you know, she would like my time to be spent, I think, with her. So I think she would like the ad revenue. I'll just say that.
Two things in response. First of all, how dare you? I thought we were having an emotional affair. Second of all, I would just recommend as you click on the start button, just hit the fast forward 15-second thing. I know it takes 3 extra seconds, but Luke and I appreciate it. I'm also looking at a few here, Luke, because I actually have it pulled up now. I see my guy Bob Motzkow's back in the comments. Do you know anything about Gopher hockey? Because the only thing I pretend to know is I know Eric Vigo is very good at covering that team, and they are not off to a good start.
They're not off to a good start. I do listen to Gopher Puck Live every once in a while. I haven't been on Gopher Puck Live before. I will say this. I did see them win one game. It was a lot of fun, and we enjoyed it a lot. But I don't know a lot of the challenges that face them. I do know that things have changed with NIL in college hockey, and Canadian hockey players are making more of a impact, I think. And the Gopher hockey lost a bunch of people. I can't add a lot more than that. But what I will say, Ryan, is if you are looking for tickets, Eventure has some Gopher hockey tickets at a very good price.
And how do you spell that URL, Mr. Buer?
EventureSHURE.com. Or go to Dinkytown Athletes Twitter. They're tweeting out some of these tickets that are available often. But if you have tickets that you can't use for, say, maybe the Wisconsin game, or maybe a Gopher basketball game, men's or women's, or a Gopher hockey game, men's or women's, or volleyball or whatever, you can share them with us or donate them, and a portion of the proceeds is going to go to Dinkytown Athletes, and it's off to a really good start. I would appreciate it. Ryan, if at some point you could retweet one of those tweets, it would help a lot. Okay, thanks.
You're always just trying to take a shot.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, you always just kind of try to drive it in a little bit deeper.
I never
emotional affair and all.
I never asked.
Not bothered with what? You, and I'm just. Well, I want to hear it now. Dylan wants us to know that I believe in the last episode we said the word consistency a record amount of times. Well, I think as we'll get into on this one, kind of saying where we've been, where we are, and where we're going, that continues to be the theme of this Gopher football team is what is that word? What is that word for this team? Because it doesn't exist on a game by game, drive by drive, quarter by quarter, section by section part of the season. We'll get into that one a little later too. But Mike also wants us to talk a little recruiting.
Go for it.
Have you seen that PJ Fleck and his staff been on a little run here this week during the bye?
They have. I noticed that they locked down a guy that had been committed at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. Did they flip a slot receiver or something like that?
All right, let me run through it. So they lost a couple of guys on the O-line earlier this season from their 2026 recruiting class. Matali Benjamin is now going to be going to Utah. And then Daniel McMorris is now going to Cal, along with Kai Meza, who's also going to Cal. So not only did they lose After Dark in Pac-12 After Dark to the Cal Golden Bears, I'm still unclear if Justin Wilcox is going to be coaching that team in a month. But if he is, he's going to have a couple of former Gopher commits from the – I guess Mountain and West, I think it's both, either way, Mountain time zone. So to try and get some momentum back, the Gophers have gotten a couple more offensive line commits. One by the name of Beckett Schreiber, who is from Madison Memorial High School in Wisconsin. First question I know I'll be asked, did the Badgers offer? No, they did not, which is very interesting considering the other school that the Gophers were battling here. Well, I suppose I should give this the disclaimer of he was committed to Washington State, but the Gophers offered, and so did the Indiana Hoosiers this fall. And Indiana had hosted him for a visit a couple of weeks ago, so that's a nice little recruiting win for PJ to beat out Kurt Cignetti and the Indiana Hoosiers there. They also were able to get a former Ohio State offensive line commit by the name of Aaron Thomas. Sounds like he and Ohio State, I will say, had a mutual breaking apart. Thomas had gone and seen Florida State this fall, and I also think Ohio State may have not thought that his tape was up to snuff to an extent.
All right.
But Aaron Thomas had seen Minnesota three different times throughout the recruiting process, and that's why you never stop recruiting someone. And now it sounds like Fleck may even be on the road this week to go see Mr. Thomas out there at Mountain Point High School in Arizona. They got a slot receiver slash return man slash one of the fastest players now on the roster. From one of your favorite, well, I'll say this. You ever been to Missouri, Luke?
There's St. Louis, Missouri? Yeah, I've been to Missouri.
I believe it's Platte County, Missouri.
Yeah, I don't know if I've been
there. I think it's Northwest Kansas City suburbs. I'm sure we have a listener from there who's calling me all types of names saying, Ryan, you have no idea what you're talking about. And I say, what are you, my wife? Rimshot. Number two, we're doing so well on this bye week. So Braden Stevens is now a part of the class. What does Braden Stevens bring to your Golden Gopher receiving core? Speed and a lot of it. He has a 10.38 100 meter time that held up. He ran under 10.8, I think, eight different times as this past spring. It's not the biggest guy in the world. I'd estimate it's probably 5'7", 5'8". But I think we all can agree that this is a Gopher offense that needs to get faster. So I know there's going to be some comparisons drawn between him and, say, a former Alexandria receiver who's now at North Dakota and Kristen Hoskins. Well, the Gophers were able to beat out Nebraska for him, who had offered 24 hours before he was supposed to visit Minnesota. He had visits set up to go see Jeff Brohm in Louisville, one of Luke's favorite coaches, also to go see Nebraska, Minnesota.
That's actually not a lot of what you say is a lie, but Jeff Brohm is one of my favorite coaches.
Why do you always say a lot of what I say is a lie? I think I bring a lot of truth and gospel.
A lot of the things you attribute to me are not true, but that one is.
Who's to say? I don't think anybody can really Who's to say?
Do you know that I thoroughly enjoyed my trip to Clemson to watch Jeff Brohm and the Fighting Louisville Cardinal win last year?
Well, first of all, future Penn State Nittany Lions head coach Jeff Brohm to you. Let's get this right. Is that a lie too, Luke Buehr?
That is actually terrifying if he had those kind of resources.
If I were to have told you back then, okay, fire James Franklin, hire Jeff Brohm, do you really think it's that big of an upgrade? If you're viewing this through a Penn State lens.
I think from a Penn State lens, probably not. But from my lens, and like, I just love the way Jeff Brohm approaches football games. I think it's an upgrade.
And then the final commit that they've gotten here so far, they've got some official visitors on campus, as always, especially with coaching carousel just around the corner. Go for illustrated.com if you want to learn more about who's on campus as you listen to this. Plus, there might be some additional visitors towards the tail end of the weekend here as well. But, and what is an outstanding running back name? Can we add Jet Walker to...
And this isn't a nickname. This is his name, is Jet.
J-E-T-T Walker from Georgetown, Texas.
Nice.
My man's got over 5,000 career varsity yards, and he is built like prime Toby Gerhart at 6'1", 215 pounds, and he wants to get one direction, and that is downhill in a hurry. So I think you look at what Minnesota has in this running back class for Jaden Everett. You've got All I Do Is Average 14 yards per carry in 5A Texas football, Ryan Estrada, who I feel very confident in saying, if you want somebody to look forward to watching next year in the running back room that gives a different skill set, Ryan Estrada is a big play waiting to happen. I think he is what we thought we were going to see with A.J. Turner if he would have stayed healthy, but I cannot wait to watch Ryan Estrada run outside zone. You've got Jet Walker, who is going to immediately be the biggest back in the room. And considering Minnesota's short yardage issues here this season, I think it makes a lot of sense to add a big body like that. And then you got a guy like Zeke Bates, who can do a little bit of both. So Fleck and his staff aren't done trying to add to this class. As always, go for illustrated.com. That's how you can support me, support full time. And especially after I don't know if you saw this, but unfortunately under the Paramount umbrella, which 24/7 Sports is, there was a lot of people in my field laid off here in the last couple of weeks. And fortunately for me, I was able to survive that round of layoffs. But if you guys haven't noticed, sports journalism, it is not exactly a thriving field. And so I think it's very important to support those who you trust. And if I'm one of those people, I'm very appreciative of it. That's why we have thousands upon thousands of you lovely listeners for something like this.
Okay. I did like this last comment we'll get to. It was Jim, actually. He said, you know, I know you're going to talk a little bit about NIL, but let's have a little fun. So we have four retired numbers up in Huntington Bank Stadium. I think it's actually five, but whatever. And you could retire a ton of numbers, but do you, Ryan, and I'll say who I think. Well, first, who are the retired numbers? Do you know?
I'm pulling it up.
Oh, no. This you got to do from memory.
From memory?
Yeah, see if you can name them.
Oh, boy. Bobby Bell.
Ding.
Bronco Nagurski.
Ding.
Bruce Smith.
Ding.
Oh, golly.
If you get either of these two, I'll be impressed. I think you get the three that are most would be able to
Sandy
get.
Stevens?
Yep. Now I feel like you're just looking at it.
No.
I would have never gotten Sandy Stevens.
I mean, I do technically cover this thing and I have for 15 years. Plus, I stare at these things and I'm at every game. I should know this. I can tell you the number. I can't remember the name.
What's the
Is
number?
Is it number 10?
Yep. Paul What's Guile. Or Guile. Guile. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it.
Guile. Yeah. Golly.
Okay, but yeah, I think I don't even have to think very hard to say who I think should have their number retired.
I mean, go ahead.
Greg Esslinger.
Yeah. I mean, you ain't going to get, see, here's the thing that even like number retired slash the Vikings do their Ring of Honor thing.
Yeah.
I wish, and I know that there's Gopher administrators that listen to this podcast,
yeah,
which
for sure.
I wish they would do that, because the thing I always continue to talk about is the Mount Rushmore of Gopher tailbacks should also have their time. Look, you're not going to even like Mark Sederstrom, like for what he was able to do. I mean, at that point too, I think you got to talk about if we're going to put, well, it's Esslinger just got in to the College Football Hall of Fame, which is awesome. But I mean, there's so many of these names throughout the years where at least I could think of like, say a non-conference game plus say a game like Michigan State, where you know it's not going to be one of your most highly attended games of the year, both of those. But if you were to do a Ring of Honor for, say, Darryl Thompson and, again, my Mount Rushmore, for the record here, of Gopher running backs, can you name the four?
Your Mount Rushmore of Gopher running backs. So you've got Lawrence Maroney, Marion yep. Barber.
Yep.
Mo Ibrahim.
I just said his name.
Nagurski? I don't know. Who's the running back?
Darryl Thompson.
Oh, Darryl Thompson. Duh.
Darryl.
Okay, yeah. Boy, yes. that's embarrassing. I'll see myself out.
Knew that, brother.
You know, I've never actually met Darryl, so
Darryl, oh my God. First of all, he is one of the nicest people you will ever meet, and he does so many good things through Boulder Options. And
yeah, for sure. But I'm gonna have like my tail between my legs, because this is gonna go viral probably in a very small community of people.
But that's even with like say those four, okay? You could do one running back a season, and then we can get into other names in the Ring of Honor who. There's so many of them that I just believe that this administration could bring back. And again, I know that everybody's so worried about stepping on somebody else's toes saying, well, if this guy got it, how come I, okay. You don't always have to care. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can care. Caring is what it is, but like, there's so many easy ones where if you start to get into, should this guy really be in it? Well, then by then, again, you don't have to put him up there. So I would say Esslinger, absolutely. I think Maroney and Barber, you have to, if we're doing just retired number type things. Now, you can still, there's only so many numbers, and there's 105, 110 players on a roster. Yeah, I know there's some duplicates, but you understand what I'm saying here. I don't know. Like, I wish the Ring of Honor would be a thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think Esslinger is the kind of easiest one for very obvious reasons. And then from there, like, we could get creative. But yeah, I like it being a little bit harder to achieve as well. You know, like, you really have to have a fantastic career, and it shouldn't be influenced by like your pro career, because Esslinger didn't go on and have an amazing pro career. Right. But he was just a fantastic college football player.
All right. Let me put one up here for you. Okay. Would you, I'll ask you this, Ring of Honor or retire the number, Adam Weber?
Oh, man.
He is the career leader at the university in passing yards and passing touchdowns, mind you.
Yeah. I mean, he was incredible, and he played when I was a student. And just to know like what he was able to accomplish with all the turmoil and like inconsistency, you know, check that box right now. Around him from offensive coordinator, like, not once did he have the same offensive coordinator in back to back seasons. Like, he deserves some sort of credit. So let's go Ring of Honor or something.
Okay. We also missed some low hanging fruit here that I want to also, Antoine Winfield Jr.
Yeah. Well, in by that
Ring of Honor, by that or token, you retire the number.
Yeah. By that token, you could also lump in, Tyrone Carter probably.
Mm-hmm.
You could have your safety, whatever group for mm-hmm. sure.
I would also put Matt Spaeth in there.
Sure. Yeah. Phenomenal pro career too.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many of these where that's, I just wish they would. I know I'm just kind of re-hitting the same points here, but I think it's a good question from Jim. Just if the you can't really retire numbers in college football because there's just so many people on a roster. This isn't a 53-man roster like in the NFL.
Right.
And you can just spread out the numbers. Right. This is college football where you have 105, 110 people on the roster. So I wish they would do the Ring of Honor. And I hope that they do here in the next 5 years or so. But because there's easily 10, 15 names that you can spend two a season for the next 6 years and then figure it out from there. Or if you even want to do one a season.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be a great idea.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about this team, and then we'll catch a quick break. We'll kind of summarize where we're at, some early impressions, and then we'll maybe chat a little bit more. Currently, your Golden Gophers are 6-3. They are also 4-2 in conference. Ryan, as we look at the preseason projections that you and I had, just to remind people, you picked 7-5 for the season, which would be over the what was a 6-5 betting line, correct? For the over under. Mm-hmm. That was a preseason prediction. They're on their way to eclipse that. I had them 8-4. If you remember and you listened to the early preview episodes, we also got the large language model input. ChatGPT had the Gophers 9-3. That looks tough to get, but possible still. Perplexity had the Gophers 7-5, and Claude had the Gophers 7-5. So generally speaking, I think that we're not crazy other than probably ChatGPT. And honestly, I think it's safe to say, Ryan, having watched what we've watched so far, I do think that the Gophers have, at this point, probably outperformed what I would have expected. I think this is maybe a little bit better, at least on the win total, because they've been just able to close out one score games.
I've spent a lot of time in a tree stand this week, and my mind drifts to this team. See, even when I'm not at work, my mind drifts to work. I'm sure many of you do that. And I've thought a lot about the 6-3 nature of this team. And the thing I keep coming back to is, if you were to have told me how some of these games have went and how some of the individual performances have gone, or who has been healthy, who has been not, who has had a sophomore slump, who has stepped up, I don't know that I would have believed myself if I were to know individually what I know under a microscope compared to just zooming out from 30,000 feet. It makes a lot of sense why they're 6-3 when you just look at the one possession games. I believe they're 3-0 there this season. But the way that they've gotten there, Luke, it has been, I feel like I'm on the Oregon Trail and I'm trying to make sure I don't die of dysentery.
Yeah. You want to know what this season in some ways reminds me of, honestly?
Go for it.
It kind of reminds me of the non-conference 2019 season. And I'm not saying the results are going to be, you know, similar to that season when we look back. Mm-hmm. But it was like, do you remember how frustrating those games were? And
oh, do I?
this season feels a lot like that. And then it was like something clicked for that team, and they started to just build and have momentum. I'm not suggesting that's going to happen, but that's how that non-conference slate kind of went. And then all of a sudden, was it their first Big Ten game was maybe on the road against Purdue, and Tanner went for like 300 some yards.
Yeah,
and like was basically perfect.
Like 14 completions, which was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was.
But yeah, you had the South Dakota State game where you're in the meat grinder and you get a late turnover to win it. You have the Fresno State John Legend game.
Oh my goodness. And that catch by
Chris Ottman Bell in the back of the end zone, and then Winfield comes away and steals it.
Yeah.
You have former Gopher legend Demetrius Douglas on the 3rd and 30.
Yes.
And then Tyler Johnson puts it away at the end to win 35-32. And then, yes, Tanner Morgan nearly throws for 400 yards. And then they just spend the entire month of October, rowing over people.
Yeah, they
killed everybody which then put them into the Penn State game, yada yada, and you go from there.
But do you see the vibes though that I'm talking about?
Yeah, where it was, well, that's the thing, is like that team figured it out. And I know it's something that Fleck has said to us in the media here, is historically Minnesota teams under PJ Fleck get better as the year goes on. I think a lot of college football coaches probably mm-hmm. say the same thing. Mm-hmm. I think historically the data would probably suggest that Fleck's right with this team, and they did go 3-1 in their last four games after they got boat raced by Ohio State. It's just, they still have yet to really put it all together. Like, they have put it together for a half, and they have against, say, Nebraska, where they're 7-6 at halftime, and then they go 17-0 in the second half.
Yeah.
They put it all together there.
It looked like they were, I mean, okay, go back to Michigan State. That first half, it looked like they were putting it together, and then they couldn't hit the field goal, right?
Yep.
And then they come out and kind of lay a dud in the third quarter. I mean, didn't just lay a dud. They did lay a dud.
Not kind of. They did.
They did.
Absolutely, they did.
But in the gotta have it moments, they've been able to find a way. Now, all those gotta have it moments have been at home. They haven't found a way. Like, one, they're not in two of those games at all against Ohio State and Iowa. And then against Cal. Well,
that's the other part of this season is they, and I don't know how else to say it, they suck on the road.
They do. But, okay, let's go back to the Cal game for just a minute, okay? Like, if Danny could do it all over again, he would not have played as much base as he did in that game. What he knows now about this team. He would have.
Song of Politele.
Yeah, he would. I mean, in Song of Politele, like, when he had time and could sit and survey, like he picked them apart in large part because they played zone, and this team hasn't been able to play zone, right? Mm-hmm. And that's something that they've learned, and so they've been trying to apply pressure then. And it's not like this team is great in man; they're not, but they seemingly can hang on just long enough to now be the Big Ten sack leaders.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other part of this team that is so fascinating, and I know people are tired of me saying this. Your Golden Gopher team heading into this weekend leads the entire Big Ten in sacks, which is crazy to me. Now, a lot of it is Anthony Smith, who continues to be the least talked about superstar in the Big Ten. I made the comment earlier today on Gopher Illustrated. People were asking me, I think it was, who's outperforming expectations. I said a few different names, and Anthony Smith was on there. And somebody pushed back against me trying to say, you know, it's a lot of cleanup stuff. How do I want to phrase this with being respectful to people? When this comes back to me, Luke, of people just wanting to be angry, you always can find something to be angry about in this world. Like, Anthony Smith is tied for the Big Ten lead in sacks and tackles for loss. And then if you want to get into the advanced stats, he leads all Big Ten defensive ends in pressures. What are we talking about that he's not overperforming? I understand he was Luke Buehr's 1-1 in the all Big Ten draft selections, which is looking outstanding by the elite talent evaluator that is the pride of Roseville West. But Anthony Smith has been tremendous. Now, where I'm going with this is they lead the Big Ten in sacks. Yet I can't get turnovers at times to save my life, including the streak that they're on right now, where they haven't forced a turnover, or excuse me, a takeaway in their last two games. How do you have 12 tackles for loss? I'm not getting over this, because I actually, oh, good for me. I texted with an NFL D-line coach about this. Oh, good for me. My Rolodex looks like Justin Guard's. And saying, what percentage can I reasonably expect of sacks to turn into forced fumbles, which hopefully will lead to more takeaways? Because in the Big Ten, do you care to guess how many takeaways your Golden Gopher team has in six Big Ten games?
In six Big Ten games, they probably have five?
Yes, they got five. Like, that's bottom half of the Big Ten. It's bottom third of the Big Ten. It's tied for 12. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand the offense is struggling. I understand the special teams is struggling. to have be the Big Ten leader right there, and to have one fumble recovery in six Big Ten games is insane to me. Now, my long-winded Dan Barrero-esque answer here is he said somewhere around, say, 15-20%. Our local media statistician, Daniel House, who spends more time than anyone I know looking at ones and zeros in terms of football context, he also believes it's closer to 20%. So if you have 32 sacks and it's 15-20%, you should be, and if my Tartan High education is correct, somewhere between 6 and 9 forced fumbles. Now, yes, I understand Devin Eastern forced one in the last game and it bounced right back into the stomach of the Michigan State quarterback, but that's where my plea is that the Gopher defensive line in these final three games, when they do get pressure, start to come down and find the ball with violence. Finish the play. If you're just swipe at the ball to get that thing out. That's all I'm saying, Luke. I know. I don't remember how I got here, which is so many times me just talking to myself. But 32 sacks, you're Big Ten leading.
Yeah.
Go for defense right there.
Yeah. Okay, we probably should catch a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk more about the team, about, I don't know, we could talk NIL and other things, but the off season's coming. I doubt we'll talk bowl, but yeah, we'll come back and talk more after the break. Ryan, I don't know if you've noticed, but energy prices seem to be going up. We probably use about the same amount of electricity, but we're happening to actually be spending more. If you are a farmer, a grower, maybe a commercial business, or you have commercial property, working with Blue Horizon Energy could actually help you hedge off these costs, Ryan. You can invest now to be able to actually save yourself money in the future, because you'll probably be using about the same amount of electricity. You'll just be paying more.
I think that sounds like a great idea to me. Again, supporting those who support us is such an important thing, or even they support the University of Minnesota. They got the solar panels on top of the brand new gymnastics facility. So they're doing their part to support your favorite football team. If you're listening to us, I'm going to imagine we're one of your favorite podcasts. So where should people go if they want to learn more about Blue Horizon Energy, Luke?
Again, go to bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. There's a form that you can fill out there. They'll get in touch with you and talk about opportunities for you. Again, bluehorizonenergy.com/gridiron. Ryan, I always enjoy when we get a chance to interact with our listeners. And I heard recently, after one of the events on Oak Street for you, you ran into Austin, who you've talked about for the Burns Insurance Agency before. Yeah. And goodness gracious, that man has a story, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, he appreciated being on the podcast here as a loyal listener. And he appreciates everything we do. And we appreciate him for supporting those who support us. And I told the story here that my father at the Burns Insurance Agency saved him $700 compared to what he was previously paying. Well, he came up to me on Oak Street and he said, "Hey, Ryan, want you to know I just talked to him. He's going to be saving me, get ready for this, $1,000 this year with switching over to a different insurance company within the Burns Insurance Agency." And that's the beauty of being an independent insurance agent, is every single year, the Burns Insurance Agency looks for the best rates and the best coverage for you, because all they want to do is give you the best service possible. Austin saved $1,000 just this past week. So if you are a Gopher fan in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, New York, Florida, or Utah, and you're looking to support those who support us, check them out today at insurancebyburns, all one word, .com, or email him directly, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
All right, Ryan, we talked a little bit about vibes for the season. Any other things you want to talk about on this season? I know that you and I have been having private kind of text conversations about finances and how the university invests their finances into Gopher football. We don't really see eye to eye on this. We can get into that if you want.
Luke loves that Mark Coyle runs the football program as lean as we've ever seen it in the Fleck era. You love that so much. I think it's very fiscally responsible for the athletic department.
I think that I'm someone that's kind of, live within your means, And if you want to spend more money, let's generate more revenue. And I recognize that football generates the lion's share of the revenue, but you also have whatever 22 or 25 athletic teams that need to need funding as well. It's not his fault that, you know, there's now revenue sharing that's available, which I'm all for. I'm not trying to say that. So balancing a budget or, you know, having to manage your own P&L is, it's not an easy thing, Ryan. And you know, I know that you would like to see more money spent on the football program. I would like to too, but I think the best way to do that is to generate more revenue. Yes.
I would argue that they are generating more revenue than they ever have, which is why their profit margin 5 years ago was $25 million for the program. And now in the latest fiscal year of data that I have seen in fiscal year 24, the profit margin is now $43 million. Now, yes, there are different challenges that have come up within the athletic department, such as the house settlement. You got to find the extra $20 million. What is it? Yeah, it's $20 million. I should know this of all people. It's $20 mil. Like, I understand the money has to come from somewhere, but I'm just, I don't want this to be the four straight off season where a coordinator leaves for no more money, or just, I don't like losing good coaches. Now, I know there's a lot of consternation out there in the fan base that if you ask them, Minnesota doesn't employ a single good coach because everybody's very emotional and doesn't know what they're talking about. So,
yeah. So let's maybe start with, you know, you very much have consternation with the fact that the Gophers have lost coordinators, correct? And the lion's share reason of that is probably financial. In part, the coordinators that they've lost are Kirk Ciarrocca on a couple of different occasions. So let's break each one of these down. Ciarrocca left for Penn State in part because of location and money. Would you agree?
He's a Pennsylvania native and he got offered the Penn State job. I mean, yeah. we don't really have to overthink it. Yeah, it was more money, but I mean, that one's more about Pennsylvania guy gets to go and back to Penn State.
And he's probably arguably his peak at that point as a coordinator of his value, right? Coordinators, you know, most coordinators aren't going to be Phil Parker and going to run the same, have the same job for an extended period of time. They're either going to go up and try and be head coaches and give that a shot, or, you know, whatever. So you can't make money at the same clip the whole time. So he's trying to maximize that. I'm fine with that. I understood the rationale and the reason. He ends up coming back, obviously, famously, spends one more season with the Gophers and then goes to Rutgers. I still think location plays a role, but also financially.
I think money plays a role in Rutgers. I think that's about the only thing I'll say. I know his daughter, I think it was his daughter, who used to be on the Rutgers soccer team, but she was out of college by the time he took that job. That one was purely, to me, about dollars and cents, which, look, if somebody offers me $1.9 million to coach, sure. But, like, I just...
Yeah, okay, so we've got that. But, like, look. I mean, we can look at the results, right? He got fired from Penn State. How are things going at Rutgers? Not great, right? Okay, so let's continue. I mean,
Rutgers is a horrific job, and then he got Penn State during the COVID season, and they bailed on him. Like,
whether that was fair or not, I agree. But, like, so the point is, if you would have upped the money, do you think that – do you think that Minnesota would won significantly more games? Maybe significantly is not even fair. Would they have won, you know, how many seasons was he not at Minnesota? There's two Mike Sanford years and now three Harbaugh years, right? Would they have five more wins with him?
I don't think five. I wouldn't agree with that. No.
So I somehow we have to try and quantify it. So let's go with that. We'll continue. Rossi leaves for money, clearly. And you know, there's speculation whether or not that's even just money he can make. He in some ways maybe had a a little bit more. I can't remember if it was a down year or not. I don't have the data in front of me. The year he left, was that one of his better years? He had a very consistently good defense. I will make the argument that no one benefited more from Mo Ibrahim than Joe Rossi.
I mean, you're probably right in that.
Yeah, I do think that's the case.
They weren't great, especially the way it ended in 23, where they gave up.
Yeah.
I mean, they ended the season on a four-game losing streak with giving up 27, 49, 37, 28 to Wisconsin. And then he ends up going, taking a three-year deal at Michigan State, which maybe he gets fired after this year. Maybe he doesn't. If he does, he gets fully guaranteed. I mean, he makes a lot of money next year.
I also think he was a little bit
suspicious about what the future was for Fleck here at Minnesota.
Yeah, and that's fair. And just NIL in general, right? In which, you know, that's a fair question. But yeah, okay, continue. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Well, it's even getting to like the whole point of like one of these years, Fleck will have a down year and probably miss a bowl game. And then it's going to be, I've seen it on a 6-3. I've seen it even here during the bye of people talking about fire and Fleck. Guys.
Yeah.
First of all, the university, to how we even got on this discussion, can never afford to fire Philip John Fleck. They can't. They would look, they can. They would never do it. I firmly believe that the University of Minnesota will never pay a $20+ million buyout in my lifetime. No shot. Not unless there becomes a T. Denny Sanford. They are so worried, okay, about being fiscally responsible, which is just a functioning human breathing, like human being in this society, sure. But the other thing that they're always so, and I tell them this and they don't listen, and you don't have to listen to my opinion, but I'm going to give it to you on something like
you also don't manage a P&L, but yeah, okay.
Well, my thing is like they're so worried about like, oh, what's the Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press going to write?
Oh, sure.
What are the casual fans going to think? Well, $20 million. Where's it going to come from? Like, no, I cannot stress to you how much I could not care what the media would think about it. And I'm a part of that. Like, if you think you got to move, you make a move. Okay. But they worry so much about just the casuals. And I don't know if it's just because your donor base is primarily gray haired. And if you have gray hair, I'm not taking shots at you. I'm 33 years old. I got racing stripes. Okay. I'm the last one. Ask my wife. She makes fun of me all the time. So I don't know if it's because they're the ones that still read the actual physical newspapers. And again, if you read a physical newspaper, I read the Pioneer Press for the first 15 to 18 years of my life. Every morning, my mother would put out the sports section for me, and I'd read that thing cover to back, box scores and all. Like, I mean, that's part of probably why, if you go back and trace my origin story of how I got here, it's a big part of it. But it's just like, who cares what the media thinks? Like, but anyways, I'm getting sidetracked here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can also just kind of finish up with the other obviously big name that they lost was now I'm totally blanking.
Corey Heatherman.
And that was money too. And in large part, like, he was probably at his, I don't know, at his peak. And also Miami was probably in a pickle.
Miami also has a ton of money. You know, the funniest part about all these names, by the way, mm-hmm. And I brought this up to somebody high up within the Gopher football department, is I made the statement to them that Greg Harbaugh is the highest paid offensive coordinator in the history of the program. And they looked at me and they said, no way, because, you know, we signed Kirk twice. I go, you signed Kirk? Yeah. To make million. I think it was like a million and 1.1 or something. You did it twice, but he never coached on it. He signed those in December and then left in January both times, one for Rutgers and then one for Penn State. You signed Joe Rossi to an extension. I think he actually did make $1 million at one point, but now he makes like $1.5 million, $1.6 million. And then you did sign Corey Heatherman in November, December last year to an extension to make him I think what would have been the highest paid defensive coordinator in program history, and then he left.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my point in this whole bit is Greg Harbaugh makes like $800,000, and he's the highest paid coached on that contract in Gopher football offensive coordinating history, and I believe he's either 17th or 18th in the Big Ten. So that's my whole bit with this thing is like, great, you want to cultivate young coaches? Okay, I get the premise behind it, to go with the exuberant nature of what is a Fleck coaching staff and the way he runs things. But this is where you and I just do not see eye to eye on this. I know that you're big, well, we're just going to hire young guys because it kind of meshes with Fleck style. And an old grouchy man, like, who's Michigan's defensive coordinator?
I don't know the name off the top of my head. Let me say this.
Wink Martindale.
Oh, like, yeah.
Wink Martindale and Philip John Fleck are not going to be coaching together. No effing way. But, like, if you want to get a guy who's got, like, a promising resume, more than, say, what Corey Heatherman had at the time, where he was just essentially, he had run some good defenses. It was James Madison, and then he was Harris Simiak's number two. That's great. But, like, if you actually want to have a guy with, like, say, more experience, and he also can still be under the age of 40. Like, that's where you and I differ with this whole thing is I don't know if this is the off season where maybe you'll have to pay Harbaugh to make sure that Drake stays around because those two are very, very tight. Mm-hmm. Or Danny Collins, I don't know what opportunities will come his way. And I know that many of you are thinking, well, Ryan, they should both fire him anyway. Now, and I'm going to tell you, you're the problem. You need to look in the mirror today and find joy. But it's just, you see what I'm saying with this whole thing?
I see what you're saying. But so I think you're short on part of my thought process. And where you're short is I think there's a lot of people that would coach college football. And there's probably an oversupply. And I've said this before. I don't know that I'm starting to question how important assistant coaches are in execution. You've told me time and time again that in football, they're the most.
No. I'm cutting you off. Yes, I remember this take you had back when, and we roasted you for it. I'm roasting you again right now. I mean, coaching, I would argue that is part of the reason Minnesota is 6-3 right now is because they're coaching every last drop of talent. And I don't think this is a very talented Fleck era team.
Sure.
Like in like 2-3 years or say in 2 years, I think it could be, but I know after this year, the only Gopher that is going to be drafted is Anthony Smith. And he's even coming out early. And again, that's not confirmed. I'm just telling you what I believe and what I've talked to others behind the scene about is I don't think Anthony Smith sticks around. I think he goes to the NFL.
Yeah.
But like, sure. Anthony Smith didn't go. Will Minnesota have a draft pick?
I will admit that I don't think I know the roster well enough, but I would assume not.
The only other guys I would tell you, okay, Devin Easter needs to have the November of his life if that's going to happen.
Yeah, now, probably not.
Off to a good start from what he did against Michigan State, but he needs to continue on that through the bowl game. Darius Taylor would have been a name 2 months ago. We probably would have agreed, but he has had the injury-riddled season from hell. Now, I will say there is some optimism here from behind the scenes during the bye week that Darius Taylor may be on track to return for the Oregon game. For those of you traveling out to Eugene, stay tuned to Gopher Illustrated. We'll see what I hear next week during practice. But even then, it's like, okay, well, Logan Redding's not going to get drafted. Like, Nate Becker's not going to get drafted. I mean, you go to the secondary, they're very young there. The linebackers, I mean, maybe Devin Williams. I don't see it. Like, this is not last year's team, which had six guys make 53-man rosters, plus guys like Jack Henderson is on a practice squad. Tyler Cooper has made a practice squad or two. I mean, we can go down the list.
Like, yeah, but trying to ascribe those – like all those guys to like a couple coordinators, you know, like one that's Harbaugh, like where Harbaugh deserves credit is he has identified quarterbacks and done a good job relative to predecessors. And, you know, Tanner Morgan had a good career, but he wasn't the, you know, he wasn't an NFL caliber quarterback outside of, you know, the cup of coffee he got, right? He had, especially with good talent, he was good. But if we're trying to say that, Joe Rossi and Scirocco, you know, are responsible for the guys getting the NFL, like, I have a hard time buying that that's really the case. My challenge, you know, that I've told you time and time again is when you do compensation is a function of experience and results. Both Harbaugh and we're probably going to stay with coordinators primarily in this discussion. You know, they did lose like the Winston, July de Boudair and et cetera. But right now, outside of talent acquisition for Harbaugh, and he has 3 years of experience, you know, I like a lot of what he does, but execution matters and the execution hasn't been there. So whose shoulders does that fall on? Because if you look at the stats are not saying like, he deserves a significant raise.
So there's a couple things within it. It's look, I'm not here clamoring to tell you that Greg Harbaugh should go make 1-5 after.
But
this
year. But your argument is that he's 17th in the conference, right? So like you're saying that they need to invest more. So is it invest more in him or invest more? How do you want to invest that money?
Yeah, again, I think with him specifically, I know that Harbaugh is a very polarizing person for both fans and media alike in this
market. I like him, for the record. I'm on the record, but I'm also trying to be objective of what I see. So,
if you like Harbaugh, you give him credit for getting Max Brosmer to play well in the Big Ten last year. If you don't like Harbaugh, your counter response is, well, Max Brosmer was that way coming from New Hampshire.
But he found Max Brosmer. He also found Drake Lindsey, right? Like he deserves that credit.
I'm just laying out to you because it's the arguments that I see every day on the message boards and on the social medias. I understand the results have not been there for Harbaugh offenses. I do. I think the first year you have Ethan Calliope-McManus really struggling as a young quarterback, and he got better by the end here, but I think he still struggles for Rutgers now. I think that was one where it was just a bad eval. And I think that's kind of borne out here over the fruition of it.
Also not his eval, but yes.
Yes. And that's where his eval was Max Brosmer. And now it's okay. Guess what? He got Drake Lindsey to play Minnesota. If Minnesota had Ethan Calliope-McManus, they would be 3-6.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And now they're 6-3. So that's where, how do you quantify the impact? And that's where, say, even an additional, say, $250,000 for him, I still believe that keeps him at 17th in the Big Ten. I'd have to pull up my offensive coordinator, all types of things. But the point being, I also think the interesting part about the Harbaugh discussion is one that I know some fans are going to hear this and roll their eyes or whatever they're going to do. I can't control your emotions. You're a grown adult. Figure it out. Is there's a lot of job openings, Luke.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody wants to win now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Drake Lindsey would potentially help you win now. And I think he's a lot more attached to Greg Harbaugh in that respect, that he's the one who saw him out of Fayetteville, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. He's
sure.
The one who then got him ready. He's put 3 years worth of time into him from the recruiting process to his freshman year with Max to now where they are together now. Like, I wonder if somebody throws money at him to try and say, hey, bring your quarterback. Let's go win. So that would be the argument of how does he become the first $1 million coordinator for the offense? I think that is a plausible scenario if you want to be Mr. I wear tinfoil hats.
And you know, that's a risk calculation that a leader has to be able to incorporate into the negotiation, right? Mm-hmm. Because he's not, I'm assuming here, I don't know this, but he's not guaranteed like the next season, right?
Yes, he is. Well, that's the other part of this whole discussion too, is Danny Collins and Greg Harbaugh are under contract for next season already. Right now, they signed multi-year deals. Now, okay, the rest of the assistant coaches, I would say 60% of them all sign one-year deals that,
sure,
they all expire in January, I'll say. So, like, it's not for coordinator contracts in this day and age, it is normally multi-year deals. Mm-hmm. So if you were to fire either one of them, and I'm not saying that Minnesota should, again, you'd still owe them, I don't know, at least $500,000 probably for next year for both of them. So, I mean, I'm also the king of Heatherman had a big buyout. Winston had a buyout. Where did all that $500,000 money go? I know it wasn't reinvested into my assistant staff salary pool. Mark Coyle just put that back into the budget, baby. Well, so that's where
they have a fair amount of it into their GM, you know. And
look, Garrett Chernoff and Marcus Hendrickson do very well for themselves in relative comparison
to the national mm-hmm. list. Like they're again, doing well.
That's like $70,000, and we're talking about a football program that makes roughly in revenue. Now, yes, Luke, I understand that this is just gross. This isn't profit and loss. This isn't net profit. I mean, it's a football program that does 90-something million in revenue.
Yeah.
Like, I'm tired of looking under couch cushions for trying to find an extra, like, $250,000 here and there.
And I'm not trying to, like, praise Mark Coyle, but, I mean, he made some tough decisions and actually cut programs and took the political heat, right? It's not a simple job. It's not a job I ever want to have, to tie the politics side with, you know, the business side of trying to balance the budget. But yeah, I am interested, as you know, to see where college athletic spending is going to go in the next handful of years.
I think it just continues to go up, and I know
do you believe that
are both together at interlocking golf club, trying to stretch every little bottom dollar, okay, Annie? But it's just...
But do you really think that it's just going to keep going up? Can I give you my theory as to why I'm skeptical that it will?
So my preamble to Luke's... So this is a part of... Look, emotional affair aside, Luke and I, this is one of the areas that... Luke continues to... Just, you know what? Go for it, and then I'll just respond.
Okay. Okay, so what's happening right now with Disney and YouTube TV?
Disney is encouraging their ESPN personalities to blame YouTube, and I think it's one of the lamest things I've seen from their ESPN people to do. But they're in a dispute about how much each side should have to pay/receive.
Why do you think that is?
Because money makes a fool of us all.
All right. Here is my theory. Again, just a theory. I think that ESPN knows they have some amount of leverage, because the only TV that is still appointment TV that exists is sports. Okay? Yeah. This mm-hmm. is how... And this is how we've seen the college media rights continue to climb. But we also saw the college media rights climb in large part, in my opinion, because of the changing landscape of television that was streaming. Okay. Streaming gave them leverage as they negotiated, because it was no longer just cable. It was also Peacock and Hulu and whatever independent streaming services you have, right? So the Big Ten could basically argue or pit these different bidders against one another to get to this large multimedia rights deal. Now, I think that era is coming to a kind of a plateau or a head, right? So you either need viewership to increase, which it has. It's been modest in the last few years. And I think it will continue to be modest, but there isn't going to be as much of an unknown. And part of the reason that ESPN is trying to do this is because they recognize that the margin that they have is being undercut by providers like YouTube TV. And as a result, they've spent a ton of money on media rights, and it is making it very difficult for them to continue their long list of programming that they need to continue to fund, right? To make a profitable enterprise. All that said, it would not surprise me if media rights plateau or even drop going into the future. So by that logic, I question whether or not, and I could be absolutely wrong about this, but this is just kind of how I think about it. It would not surprise me, given all the competing constraints that exist within a budget, that you're going to have to be able to cut money somewhere, or, you know, something's going to have to go down. And I think this year is going to be very interesting to look back on in 5 or so years, given all the head coaching turnover that we have and all these really high, high salaries.
Well, that's going to be my point to you in response is, sure, I hear the YouTube and Disney argument, and then I look at real life and see that before November 1st came and went, other college athletic programs are going to combine to spend. And again, we still don't know where this thing's going to end. Luke, they're paying over 160 million real U.S. dollars in buyouts just to get people out of here. 160 million. Like, college football is not like any other sport. It is. You can't compare it to the NFL. You can't compare it to any other one, just because the money, it feels like monopoly money that gets spent in this sport. It's like, where does all this money actually come from? And that's where donors can have such a big say. Mm-hmm. And I understand that if you don't have a huge donor base, like Minnesota doesn't have a Phil Knight or a Mark Cuban or pick your XYZ school, but like, at some point, you have to just accept that the monopoly world that is college football, I just don't know when this thing finally comes down. I feel like we've been saying this now for how many years?
Well, I think NIL has very much changed the narrative around college football, right? And we talked about this, that we anticipated that there would be more parity. I would argue there's been more parity. I think programs are now struggling to admit that there is more parity, and they're not comfortable with the outcomes that they're seemingly having to encounter week after week, right? And this is part of what is feeding into these probably overreactions in some respects. I think it's more has the SEC fired more coaches?
I mean, you've got Billy Napier already out. LSU's looking for a coach. I mean, Mark Stoops is very much still in the hot seat, and he's got like a $30 million buyout. Like, we're over $160 million in buyouts, brother.
Oh, yeah. But like, each of those individual, like, I understand in the aggregate, but individually, those entities had to go, okay, how are we going to cover this and be comfortable with the plan of how they're going to cover it? So they're
Freeze is fired. Sam Pittman. I mean, we already got 4 SEC jobs open. Plus, that's not taking into account if Mark Stoops gets fired, not taking into account if Missouri's coach takes a job elsewhere, Vandy, Lane Kiffin, like all there is going to end up being, I mean, between buyouts to fire people and buyouts to hire guys away from others, there's going to be over $250 million, I would estimate.
Yeah. And that's why I think looking back at this is, could this season be the one that puts some athletic departments into financial ruin? That's what I'm curious.
We've already seen that places like Rutgers, UCLA.
Yeah. I mean, and they're in tough spots.
They don't care.
Yeah.
They
well,
don't care.
So in yeah, but like, how long is the endowment going to support them? Or how long are the boosters going to be there to support them? That's the question we don't know.
I'd love to find out one of these years if the University of Minnesota could ever be in that situation is all I want to say.
Sure.
Either spend more than your means like UCLA and Rutgers do and then don't care about the consequences, or when Ohio State spent $30 million more dollars than they brought in, and the AD's out here talking about how...
This is kind of reinforcing my point where the AD is like, yeah, well, I wasn't going to be around, so I was just creating a problem for, you know, the future guy, right? Like, he didn't have to be accountable for it, so he did it. Like, good for him.
Here's the last thing I'll say on this, is you think about this as a person who's actually responsible. Look across college football with the way people light money on fire. None of it's responsible. None of it. But that's my point, is that's college football. It's willy-nilly. It's vibes. It's aura. I want immediate results now. And if I don't get it, we'll find somebody with oil money or just Deep South money or Penn State money, like whatever. I'd love to cover a program like that with a T. Denny Sanford or something like that, man. That'd be fun.
I don't know if you wanted a T. Denny Sanford. Not that I have like great connections into there, but I don't.
Also, can I get the Luke Buehr, Mark Cuban rise with Indiana as he walks away? Can you also then send it to Dan Barrero to tell him, if I have to listen one more time to him talk about Indiana as if they're just the little sisters of the poor and it doesn't coincide with Mark Cuban stepping down from the Mavericks and now becoming like this mega booster for all things University of Indiana, both student newspaper, I think he's funding the rugby team by himself.
It's amazing when you're no longer the governor of, you know, and you're no longer the governor, but you actually have liquid capital. Like, one thing people don't understand is some of these people aren't liquid, right? They might be worth a lot of money, but they have to borrow against it to get cash. Like, he's liquid. That's the big difference for them. So,
all right.
So last comment from me. You saw the news about ESPN and Penn Entertainment, right?
That some sports betting thing.
They're ending their partnership. It was a 10-year deal, $2 billion, right?
Jesus.
They ended it after 2 years. So what I will say is I think in sports, a lot of financial decisions aren't maybe rooted in reality, and that might have been one. You might remember that Penn actually sold Barstool back to Dave Portnoy for a dollar because of the opportunity that they had with ESPN. You see where that gets them. You also see where ESPN is now. What I would say is there probably should be shareholder lawsuit for breach of fiduciary duties on the entire saga that exists there. It's just a complete utter, it seems like to me from the outside, just utter incompetence. I think that can be happening here. You know, I come from this from a standpoint of running businesses and having, you know, shareholders that you're accountable to. Maybe there aren't shareholders in the world of sports. And that's where my thinking comes from. But
there
are
shareholders in sports. I just refuse to grasp that there are shareholders in college football.
Yeah, and maybe that's where I'm wrong.
Like,
and I always, you know, I'm thinking of this as like, this is the long term, right? So play the game, play the hand that you can, play for the long term, but don't put yourself in a position to not be able to keep playing. That's I guess where I'm coming from. You know, it will be interesting. I think this year I'm bookmarking it. Did I tell you that I've already set reminders in my phone to message you to revisit this and record a podcast about it? We have 5 years and 10-year reminders already set. So this assumes that, you know, our emotional affair lasts that long. So.
Three more games together, my friend. Three more games. You got Oregon next week.
And then you're just not going to text me anymore. You're so sick of me. So good. Okay. Just to wrap it up here, let's talk about the future tiny bit for the Golden Gophers. Eight wins is not unrealistic, right? But six wins is also very realistic, too. It will be a fascinating ride. This team is going to play a neutral site game, technically a road game. They are also going to host Wisconsin, who's not very good, but has, as you said, going to be reinvesting in their program and committing to Luke Fickell. And then they're going to play Oregon. You know my feelings about Oregon. I am not a big Oregon Ducks fan. They are one of the teams I hate more than any team in all sports. And I don't think the Gophers have much of a chance.
Well, I'll say this. I'm going to be very curious to see what happens on Saturday. Not only is it going to be the first cold game of the season for all these Big Ten teams, it's Oregon goes into Iowa, where we'll see where this storm tracks, but there could be snow, sneet, whatever it may be, precipitation falling during this game. And if Iowa's going to do it, they need this game to be a 20-17 type of game. And I think the weather's going to help them in that regard. Now, none of this matters for the Gophers then setting up to go to Eugene off a bye week and Oregon returns home on a short week if they just refuse to travel.
Mm-hmm.
The Gophers are 0-3 on the road and have been outscored by 90 points. That is 9-0. I don't know why this team refuses to travel. I think it starts up front. I think their offensive and defensive lines have largely been no-shows on the road. And if that's going to be the case, I don't care who's coordinating you. Could be Kevin O'Connell and who's the Vikings defensive coordinator? I should know this. Brian Flores. Like, they could be coordinating it. But if you're just not going to show up in the trenches, that's going to be the thing. So you need to show up front against Oregon, against Northwestern, and against Wisconsin, because Northwestern is the same Northwestern team that you're thinking about from the last 20 years. You would even think that Pat Fitzgerald still coaching them. Is they're a meat grinder. They can run the ball well. They struggle to throw it. Their quarterback is meh. He turns it over too much for my liking, and they play solid defense. Wisconsin, we'll see what they have left in the tank. I know that Fickell's going to be back, and I'm sure Billy Edwards will be back here soon. It feels like a game at home where if you get up 10-0, this is a Wisconsin team that has scored 27 points in 5 Big Ten games. And they just continue to be beaten down. And now they get to go face your Washington Huskies on Saturday before they head out to Bloomington, Indiana, before they take on Brett Bielema at home. And this thing just does not get any easier for them. But the crux of it, Liz, Luke, if you want your team and you want to be dreaming high, saying they're going to go 8-4 and they're going to give Oregon a run for their money on Friday night on Fox, the Lions need to show up, and then you can start thinking warm thoughts for a bowl game. But if they don't, and then Northwestern takes you into a meat grinder in Wrigley Field, and then I can't even imagine what this fan base would be like if you lose to Wisconsin at the end of the season.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't be pretty.
It's – again, you got to show up front. That's my key here. You're going to hear a lot over the next month. And for all of you listeners, we appreciate you sticking to the end of this bye week one. For all the men, you're very handsome. For all of our queens out there like Haley, who always comments in the Spotify, you are strong, independent women who don't need no significant others. We love all of you, Luke.
Yeah.
Even you, my emotional man.
Ryan, I appreciate the conversation. It's been fun to talk, about a number of topics today. And thanks, everybody else, for listening. And go.